Okay. Okay. Take your seats. Take your seats. Time to get this show on the road.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's rock. We do have the chat room up too, by the way.
I'm not there.
Tonight that hopefully will not be so much titillating as illuminating, because we're going to talk about the Marxist agenda in America and the fact that music keeps popping up here. Anyway, welcoming from south of where I am, close to the coast, is my friend Visigoth.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm a bad man. I'm a bad man.
We already knew that. And from the west coast of the United States, coming at you from GordonComstock.com is Gordon Comstock.
Yo, hey, hello.
Hey, good evening, guys. Okay, so we sort of tasked ourselves, I believe, this evening with attacking the concept of what has been occurring in history, and most certainly in recent history, in terms of the United States and the Marxist agenda. And hopefully what we're going to do is factually debunk a number of myths that have existed out there, and also open up some truth about what happened from, let's say, 1932 onward. Certainly the arc of the big suckdown, which is now occurring under President Barkey. So, Keith, maybe you kind of open up the topic matter a little bit, because you sort of had a number of bullet points that you wanted to get into this.
Well, the genesis for all this is a book that I make much out of, and I know most folks don't know about it. It's called Towards Soviet America, and it was written by William Z. Foster. It came out in 32, so you get a figure. He wrote it in the preceding year or so. And that's important because it was before, obviously, the Depression really got entrenched, and before FDR. And, of course, what FDR did, he didn't do like it came out of his mind. I mean, he was told to do this. But what FDR presided over was foretold in Foster's book. Now, who is Foster? Foster was second in command of the American Communist Party, with Earl Browder still the number one person. Why Foster was the one who wrote it, we can all, you know, find that out for ourselves, but nevertheless, he did do it. And in that book, he made some declarations where either he was very prescient, or a real good guesser, or there's a plan for this country like there is any, and I think we all kind of believe that, and I think that's evinced in what he wrote and when he wrote it. And I think it puts to rest a lot of myths. And it also brings to light the fact that, you know, it's okay in America if you create federal offices. It's called federalization. in a way, Foster was backhandedly laughing at us, saying, it ain't any different than Sovietization. You guys just call it federalization. And he was right. So anyway, that book is around. It's there to be written, read online. But then it also began to make me wonder, and we were talking about banking a while ago.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, okay, we have three basic systems. We have socialism, which is probably the oldest. We have capitalism, and we have communism. And you can call it Marxism. You can cut it up any way you want to. But to me, it's basically communism. And do I believe Karl Marx wrote any of that stuff out of his own head? Absolutely not. I think he was an amanuensis of anything else. Him and Engels didn't do anything except become Trumpists for what was supposed to be installed in Russia, the old Soviet Union. And we can go into that later. So what I had asked you guys and the folks that are listening, I mean, basically I'm thinking out loud or wondering out loud, what about socialism? What about capitalism? What about communism? Where does it come from? Why did it find the places where it found, obviously, fertile ground? And do all paths finally lead to what Foster said? And can I just do a quick quote?
Sure, yeah, please.
All right, this is what I think is really seminal. He said, from capitalism to communism, through the intermediary stage of socialism, that is the way American society, like society in general, is headed. It represents the main line of a march of the human race to the next higher social stage in its historical advance. It is the trend to which all the economic, political, and social forces of today are contributing. I don't think he was bragging. I think he was predicting, and I think he did it from a position of knowing that what was happening, and we're seeing it happen today. It happened under FDR, it'll happen under Obama, and it'll happen after him. It's not the presidents that decide to do this. They're told what to do, and if they change their minds, they wind up like Kennedy. So that's my little screed to open things up, and anybody else want to build on it or tear it down, it's okay.
Yeah, well, where did socialism and Marxism begin? I mean, I think you and I talked about this in a conversation the other evening. You know, really, if you look at it, they've given names to these systems that have existed for a long time. What we call socialism is premised on any number of models and any number of philosophies. And, you know, I plan to get into, at some point tonight, dialectic materialism, what the roots of that are. But basically, even that goes back to very old philosophies. The dialectic itself is based on, you know, models of philosophy that go back probably 1,000 years before socialism was formalized. The system itself only has to do, I think, with command and control of people and finances and goods and services. And basically, it's the command and control grid for, you know, controlling a society, which is the premise of Marxism, premise of materialism itself.
There was the last independent AM radio talk radio station in Los Angeles before it got bought out by the people who buy everything out, the Salem Communications and all
clear,
that.
Clear Channel.
Clear Channel,
clear
yeah.
Channel, yeah.
Before that happened, there was a kind of a historically prestigious TV newscaster who actually spoke his mind, and he went into radio, and I used to listen to him in the 80s and 90s. George Putnam was his name. Kind of famous in the L.A. area, and he died recently. But anyway, he used to say, the difference between socialism and communism is like the difference between seduction and rape. I would add on to that, either way, you're getting screwed.
Right.
I would also say, though, that looking at it from the biblical worldview, there is no system that works, and capitalism is no better. I would say socialism inevitably morphs into communism just as readily as capitalism inevitably morphs into fascism. Either way, you get what George Orwell called oligarchical collectivism in the end.
No, this does come back to Orwell, doesn't it?
You know,
well,
Gordon.
I'll tell you what, I did read this last chapter of Foster's book, The Tour of Soviet America.
Yeah.
I felt like I was reading the anti-Orwell. I was like, are you kidding me? Does this guy believe what he's writing? It was like everything the opposite of how of what Orwell would have been writing.
Yeah, I agree that there's propaganda in between a lot of the predictions that he makes. That probably some of them have not yet happened. But there's enough there that he said would happen and did happen that I know he wasn't playing at all from his skull. But there is a lot of propaganda there, and it leads me back to, and I don't know if we spoke about this the last time around, and you look at that memoir by Bella Dodd in School of Darkness. You can also read that online, where she was more than willing. You know, she was a teacher in the 30s United States. She was fully behind the unions. She was behind the Communist Party. She believed in all their platitudes, and she was a great tool for them. And in the end, like, you know, as she wrote, she said, but I realized that when you fell, no one was there to pick you up. They just simply stepped over you. And she understood who was behind communism. She doesn't really get too, she doesn't get exact at all about who she says it is. But you can understand who it is, especially because it's got to do with the Manhattan money. And we'll leave it there. So, yeah, there's a lot of promises, but it's, as Gordon was saying, as Randy, as you know, I mean, it's a human form, it's a human collective. It's run by humans, and it can only be corrupt, and this one is no different. So there's a lot, like, for instance, I mean, like Gordon said, Foster makes a statement like this: the American Revolution, when the workers have finally seized power, will develop even more swiftly in all its phases than has the Russian Revolution. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I don't see workers wresting power from anybody. So that didn't happen, unless, you know, I got that wrong, but I don't see any kind of victory by the proletariat. So,
who's he trying to kid? I kept asking myself, and just reading the one chapter.
Well, like, you know, like Randy said as well. I mean, it's there's a lot of platitudes. There's a lot of seduction going on. Like, no one would bite into a poison apple, as we said, unless it looked good. And that's what socialism right now is being. I think, presented to the American people, and more are saying, look, I'll take anything, just give me some kind of, you know, Circe's. And, of course, socialism looks like the way to go because you all get your bowl of rice. But it really is a lie.
But didn't the expectation of getting the bowl of rice really come from being premised on the lack of the bowl of rice in the first place? You know, basically this is a problem-solution situation that's set up by the dialectic, which really is the basis of all this. We've been given two systems to choose from, at least here in the West, and, you know, obviously Europe, and I think Europe chose a long time ago.
But did Europe, you see, but let me ask you that, and honestly I want you to address that if you don't mind. Excuse me for interrupting. But here's the old story. Did Europe choose that, or was Europe given that, and they accepted it? And does it have anything to do with this fact that socialism took root in Europe, with any kind of, shall we say, kinder, gentler form of monarchy? Now, I don't mean to derail you, but, I mean, go ahead.
I'll go first on that. I think the seeds of that were probably born through feudalism, and I think feudalism and the expectations which seem to be woven into the culture in Europe, the idea that it was possible to have a master king who then enslaved the rest of the populace and used them, you know, at best as indentured servitudes. It's so woven into the mindset of Europeans especially, and those who rebelled, it's pretty clear there was a seed of that in what migrated across the ocean to where we are now. But I think that was the seedbed, and I think, you know, over time they refined it and formalized it. If you look at communism in its first form, it was the overthrow of the Tsar in Russia. So it was anti-royalty at the same time that it was really just seeking to replace royalty with a collective identity.
Okay. Okay. I'm wondering, too, because since Europe had been under the thumb of monarchs, perhaps some more despotic than others, maybe some more benign than others, there was still that kind of conditioning that went on. So I guess at some point, and it's interesting to see when that happened, it was probably through the 19th century, that you saw monarchies kind of withdraw a bit and, like, allow at least the facade of social democracies and parliaments and prime ministers to come forward. I think all of us, all three of us, and we're removed probably by a decade or so, we all came to think that monarchs were just fops. They were idiots, you know, like Queen Elizabeth and Beatrix and all that in the Netherlands. But really, they never really lost power. They just stood back and let this social democratic situation play out, knowing that they would be back one day. I mean, life has never been hard for them, so they really not lost anything. Generationally, they've always been very well off.
You know,
I'm sorry?
That's the first time I've ever thought of this, but now that you mention that they probably learned that strategy, that ploy from the Vatican, because that's who did it first. You act like you're not in control when you're in more control than ever, and you're hiding behind this facade.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you really want to get something done, you have to book your ego. And I think that they were wise enough and through the centuries knew, let the people think whatever they want. We're in control. Let them rail at the parliament, at whatever government body they have. We're still running the show, but let that happen. You take a look at the United States. I mean, how many people really understand that things get done in the CFR, started by the Rockefellers, and plugged into, obviously, the church up the block, St. Patrick's? They never think of that. And that's why we said, you know, I was saying before the election last year that the idiom I embrace is that the people who run this country don't run for office. And I don't think there's anything truer than that. So, yeah, I mean, if they can just book the whole idea about not being seen as being anything powerful, beautiful, beautiful. It's the best thing. It's like that movie, The Usual Suspects. Kevin Spacey's character was limping, and he looked, you know, infirm,
yeah,
and he ran the whole show. All that limping and stuff was just a show, and he got away with it. That is a perfect metaphor for true power that lets you think that they're not in control, and then everybody throws rocks at Congress or Parliament. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful technique, and it works, and it's worked for generations, and it still works today.
Don't you think that what they did was essentially hid the hand of power, removed it from the persona of a monarch, and transitioned it into, again, this collectivist, the Soviet basically being comprised of committees and administrators who were relatively faceless, except for, obviously, Marx, Stalin, and Lenin. And, I mean, Stalin and Lenin brought the cult of personality to the whole thing, you know, in the worst possible manner. But it seems like they transitioned away from that, but it was really just one hand feigning the same motions as had, you know, been previously seen. They just put a sock puppet on it, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that people in Europe were used to obviously being controlled by the state. They just dressed it up, put lipstick on it, and threw it out to the people. And in fact, it probably was a better situation. But it was still the state taking care of you. And I remember getting some really poignant emails from an individual in Sweden. And this happened like 2 years ago. And he was saying, you know, people think that socialism is a good deal. And he goes, I've lived in it, and I can tell you that it's dulling. It's, incentive. It's de-incentives, and it's just a very, very stark life. But people in the United States, because capitalism is seen now, and rightfully so, as being savage, unequal. But that's being done deliberately to make Americans say, look, we want socialism. And socialism to me, as you had said before, I believe, Randy, is just window dressing on totalitarianism. Once you go for the bait, you've been had. And once you've been had, there's no way out. And everybody understands they've been lied to. Then go ahead, I'm sorry.
One thing, if we're talking about Europe, we should throw in real quick is, whatever decisions are made for Europe, you have to talk about the Club of Rome. I find it interesting. I just found this out reading a book. You can, as you have, Viz, you can, if you do some digging, you can find the roster of the CFR. But isn't it interesting? You cannot do so, last time I checked, no roster for the Club of Rome.
Well, they're a think tank, and Lord, isn't the world full of think tanks? You got to wonder, why do we have all these think tanks? You know, every time I you know, you read news articles and stuff, and somebody will come out, well, the Rand Corporation or the Pew Corporation, and, you know, it's like, who are these people, and why do we need them, and why is everybody making policy when it's supposed to happen, in Congress? No, you're right. I mean, can you find a roster for the trilaterals? Can you find a roster for the Bilderbergs? No. I mean, maybe there is somewhere. I mean, you know, I went ahead, as you know, all those years, and I got the rosters. I think that's come to an end. And after a while, it's like, well, what's the point? But, I mean, you take a look at something, and that, well, let me just give you a really quick example, and not that you guys don't understand this, but this shows you the way the world really works. Ken Starr supposedly was dogging Clinton over the situation with Whitewater and the law firm and what it did down there, and it took, what, 5 or 6 years? And what happened? Basically, or actually, nothing. Now, when you take a look at the CFR rosters, who are both members? Ken Starr and Clinton. Do you think those two really were pitched enemies? No, it was a stage show.
Yep.
Now, well, there's other things that... Go ahead.
It was a stage show every bit as much as any congressional inquiry committee in the 20th century. That, as you say, Viz, I like your phrasing this, all they do is they're set up to let some heat out of the kitchen so that people will think something's been done,
well,
nothing ever gets done.
And Randy and Gordon, remember something, too, because I was thinking about this when Randy was speaking, and that is, no matter what kind of system you have, they all tell you they're a democracy. North Korea says it's democracy. You know, Russia says it's democracy. And the thing is, everybody gets to vote. So,
well, or they call themselves alternately a republic. I mean, isn't it fascinating? Remember that, and you know, I've never been able to track this down factually, but the old story is that when Franklin walked out of Independence Hall and was asked what form of government we were given, he winked and said, a republic if you can keep it, like, you know, the joke was already laid that, the republic was just a cloak for something else. And I mean, Franklin's actions specifically in a lot of the, you know, the founding fathers seemed sometimes to be divided between federalism and anti-federalism. It's pretty clear that Franklin was not an ideologue in that corner at all, because he was over in Paris hobnobbing with the ruling elites at the time.
And a fornicating.
And a baby killer. Yeah. Let's just pull the stops out here. Franklin was a Satanist.
Oh, yeah.
That'll
yeah.
come as a blow to you Quakers out there, but then you're stuck in your religious system also.
He was a member of the Hellfire Club, right?
Yeah. And, you know, they dug it up a few years ago, and they found bones underneath the floor, and they carbon dated and did all this other stuff. And it looks like human sacrifice took place there.
Oh, wouldn't that come as a surprise?
Yeah, really. Well, it may have been the forerunner of Bohemian Grove.
This is another whole topic in itself.
Well,
I mean,
it is. But, it, you know, you can't remove this because...
Oh,
you know,
no! No, what I was going to say is, I mean, Renaissance Landscaper and I used to do a lot of lampooning, like Monty Python did about history.
Yeah.
Well, we would run with these scenarios, you know, during the course of a day or whatever. And we used to make fun of what really is real. And it's here to this day. And, I mean, it's absolutely repulsive in its nature, to its core. And that is all the debauched things that went on with these people in power. I mean, the old white guilt thing. I mean, you talk about the Hellfire Club. Shall we explain about the Golden Showers Club?
Ooh. <You know? laughs> Do we really need to?
But you see what I mean? It's like people have... It is true. It's like the statement that Catherine Austin Fitz once said when she was trying to break down what was going on and people's eyeballs were getting like larger and larger like sauces. And she said, you know what the problem is, folks? What is it? Angels don't know what it is to be lost. Good people don't realize what's going on. I mean, if they actually pulled the carpet up to take a look at what was underneath it, they would freak. And if anybody wants a little glimpse into that, just one segment of that, Eyes Wide Shut was telling you folks more than you want to know.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, human sacrifice, and I should have Ellen Lacter on again because I hate to say this, but you know what? How that woman continues to do what she does, dealing with ritual abuse victims and delving into this, I don't know how she's wired, but she does it. And I mean, some of the things that we talked about, I would get emails going, that can't be. It's like, what do you want me to tell you? Okay, everything's all right. Don't worry about it, folks. Everybody lives in Beaver to Cleaver Town. I'm sorry, but I mean, it went on in the Old Testament. It goes on to this very day. And I used to try to tell people, you know, evil and debauchery doesn't get more sophisticated as the millennia go by. It is still as base and rotten and evil as it ever was. It just happens beneath the radar screen, and nobody really calls attention to it, except for the few whistleblowers that come out and, of course, get demonized as being nuts. So there's your, you know, that's the same old story. But that's the way things are. And Franklin was a piece of crap, and I have to laugh because in that James Shelby Downard / Hoffman book, Kingkill 33, you talked about Franklin and said, you know, in the daytime he was writing hymns like at the, you know, Anglican church, and at night he was whooping it up in a Hellfire Club.
Yeah.
It doesn't get better than that, sports fans.
By the way, you know, you mentioned Ellen Lacter, and I was brought to memory about the book that came out, and you interviewed the Noblets a few years ago, Ritual Abuse in the 21st Century. I'm going to tell you something. The listeners don't think that this stuff occurs. I invite you, please read Ritual Abuse in the 21st Century, because once you get done with this book, you will never look the same way again at all these nice mainstream people out there that you think just are leading normal lives. The abnormal walk among us, and they abuse children. Boy,
yeah,
we went.
And of course,
yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that scripturally, you understand what children are to the Lord, and you cannot do anything worse, I don't believe, than to defile a child. So then, of course, what would Satanists most want to do to strike a blow for their cause, and that is to defile children, and we see it left and right. And I mean, you know, without getting into wild speculation, you take a look at some of the things that have happened with certain high-profile families and their children, and one wonders how in the world JonBenet Ramsey was killed and had done to her what was done. I mean, it's, and of course around the winter solstice, isn't that great?
Yeah.
And in Colorado, it even gets better. So, I mean, yes, this goes on, but this is the nature of the people who run the show, and they do it pretty much with completely impervious to any kind of prosecution. It's just not going to happen.
Well, it's because they own the justice system, they own the police forces, and they own anything that could potentially shut them down from this. And those who have, I don't know if you followed this, well, we'll get back on to topic here, but this is not unimportant, and it's also not unrelated. Following the case over in Scotland of the Down syndrome girl who was, it looks like right now, she has the ability to probably bring down the Scottish government at high levels because it's connected, and this is in Edinburgh, Scotland. Apparently, everybody in government in Edinburgh is connected to this, and it goes the whole way up to the chief council of Scottish government. And so, you know, a lot of this has to do with ancient occult ritual that is, I'm sorry to say it, deeply embedded within the American culture as all. So tell me this is a godly nation, and I have a trash can here that I can bend over and retch into, because I don't want to hear it. You know, the blood ties in this country, well, they cry out from the ground, as it says in the book of Genesis.
Also, that you mentioned Scotland, I don't know if you guys were around at this time, but I had on a woman who wrote a book about the Dunblane massacre, which nobody remembers. I mean, it really was kind of out of sight, but we went through a stretch there, and I don't know if it was like 94 to 96 or something like that, where you had the Columbine massacre, you had the Dunblane shooting, which was of grammar school children, and then you had the Port Arthur massacre in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But what was interesting was the author, Sandra Utley, who at the time was like an EMT who came to the scene as obviously a rescuer. And when she wrote the book, and then she got involved with coming on the show, and then she heard stories from Zabel and Ralph Zashmir, about Columbine, and then also the stories coming out of Port Arthur. Then she started to put it together, and it was actually organic happening at the time when she realized just exactly what Dunblane was and how. I don't know if she ever did a revised edition, but she started to realize what she saw, and then it started to make much more sense, and it was not pretty, and her life was not necessarily, you can imagine, very pleasant when she came out with that. I don't know what the end of all that was. So that you mentioned that situation also. Here's another one in Scotland as well. I mean, not to get down on the Scots or the UK, but, you know, here again, you had a patsy. In all three cases, there were patsies and a whole lot more that was going on. And, of course, we were told, you know, the same thing, that one person did it in Dunblane and one person did it, or that person did it in Port Arthur, and that the two, Klebold and Harris, were the only ones involved in the Columbine situation, which, of course, most students understand was not the case. Hey, so, I mean, there you go again. Huh?
Go ahead and finish it.
No, I'm done. I'm sorry.
Okay. It's becoming increasingly clear to me that what we have today in America is, you know, the common people have their religion, but the elites have their Luciferian religion that they do in the dark, and it's so outrageous as to not be believed by the commoners, and that's how the elites can get away with it. But I think if you look at the Old Testament, and even in Israel that was collapsing, we read chapters like Ezekiel 8, and we find out what the evil priests were doing in secret, and you had the groves, always the high places and the groves that kept cropping up in Israel over and over, and you'd get a good king in once in a while who would chop them down and knock them over, the Asherah poles. But I think, have you ever thought of this, or are you on board with this? Is it always the bulk, the common people have one religion, but this Luciferian elite religion, it only happens with a small percentage of people, but it's always the people who are in charge, and they mostly do things at night. And even when we look at reliefs of ancient Egypt and their Eye of Horus religion and all that, do you think it was just the elites who were mainly in on this Luciferian religion, and the commoners just had this more mundane, primitive religion, like you see with the 501c3 corporate Christians today?
Well, if you remember what we spoke about the last time we were together, and it still is the same source in what we're talking about today as what we were talking about then, and that is, you know, for those who understand, I mean, it's satanic. And what was the whole idea of Satan taking over governments and creating money and mercantilism? And that is because of power. So those who sought that were in his inner circle, and of course, yeah, they went their own way and have their own religion. And then, of course, like we always know, I mean, we see them with their Bibles. I mean, I have to laugh. Like we said, you never see an official, a politician, especially when running for office, who isn't a Christian. They all make sure they get their little video or photographs with them going to church holding their Bible like Clinton, which makes me want to absolutely hurl.
Yeah.
So you're right. No, it's always been. That's the inner circle. How deep it is and how far it goes is really interesting. But,
what that means is the common average Joe Sixpack, always looks around at his kind of people, who are all that's all that he meets in his circles, and he says, we're a godly country, or we're a moral people, and it's always crap because they're always led by Luciferians, and they don't know it.
I mean, people get all upset when we talk about the founding fathers. I mean, they have been recorded in history as being near deific, and they were just as much of a bunch of scumbags as they are today. Oh, all this great stuff's written about them, and like we said, there's never a shortage of beauty pieces about any politicians that will be the record in posterity. But the people who lived during that period and who had eyes to see and ears to hear know it was a bunch of crap. And some go out and they write books that never see the light of day. And we've seen some of those suppressed works ourselves. And they were right. And I mean, the Informer's done a lot of research in that area along Montgomery and have shown you where you can go. And you can read the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist papers, too. You know, I mean, Jefferson is full of these platitudes that get plastered all over the place, but this guy was such a snob and elitist, it's unbelievable. But we make excuses for all that. We make excuses for people who are slavers and lawyers and bankers and realtors, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I sent you a message about Jefferson, which we haven't talked about ever, but I'll repeat it again just for the sake of preserving it in audio. Have you ever read the works, talking about Jefferson, have you ever read the works of somebody who wrote so fiercely about shedding blood for liberty yet the guy never picked up a gun in his life.
No, nobody shot his ass.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I know, I love it. I'm saying, no, he didn't get a scratch on him, did he?
Yeah.
And I mean, but you know, and it's not like I'm upset about being American. I was born here. It's great. It's just another place. It's okay. What I do rail against is what has been told about this place, which is a fairy tale meant usually to get people to go out and do things for the corporation that has nothing to do with patriotism. But as I said with Paul Sandu the other day, and we maybe said a while ago, but you know, the only time I hear about patriotism is when they want to kill you or take your money away.
Yeah.
Then we hear about patriotism. Listen, it's the corporation, you know, and I guess Sonny Corleone got it right. You know, hey, your family ain't your country ain't your family. Blood is first, and believe me, that's good advice, I think.
It's interesting you brought up the corporation, and we maybe get back to the nub. Nice segue,
uh-oh,
by the way. Like that. Very deft.
Very good move.
But
yeah,
in the chat room, somebody was bringing up about corporatism, profit over people, and Chuck in the chat room says, what is the answer to confronting these corporate pirates? Is there an answer?
Jesus Christ.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And this is going to be unsatisfactory. And this is the way I feel, and I know you two do. But, I mean, I'd love to hear from anyone how in the world this is going to get turned around. If this were, like, you know, at the time when both farmers and the military had one-shot rifles, I'd say you have a chance. But here's the problem, too, and I always think back to Pancho Villa. You know, like you said, you know, I can throw a revolution, but I can't run a country. And if you take a look at Villa's history, every general he rode with eventually became the dictator, and then he rode with another general to throw that dictator over, and then he rode with another general to throw... You see what I'm saying? You
and
can throw over...
They finally bumped Villa off.
Huh?
And they finally they finally had to bump him off, Pancho Villa.
Well, yeah, but I mean, in the meantime, the guy said it straight. I mean, he was overthrowing how many governments, because no matter who got into that office, and it isn't a Mexican thing, it's the way it is everywhere. You throw a revolution, you throw a bad guy out, the guy comes in, he becomes a bad guy. Because it just is that way. So what this gentleman, Chuck, is asking in the chat room, and I don't have access to that, and that is, no, I'm sorry, the bad news is you're not going to overthrow it. You're certainly not going to talk anybody out of it. I never heard of anyone who threw a revolution and talked somebody out of it. And there's certainly,
but, yeah.
I mean, as far as violence and an uprising go, that's not going to happen anymore. It's over the hill.
You recall Ian Slater, the book you reviewed, and he was wrote about Orwell.
Yep.
He criticized Orwell for only being a critic and not offering anything constructive to fix the world, and yours and our point was, well, maybe there isn't a way to fix the world. Hello?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, all right, Ian, tell us your plan. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And Orwell said it. He didn't have to have solutions. He called it the way it is. And like I said, I know it's an unsatisfactory thing to say, but, I mean, I'm all up for a good fight. It's okay with me, especially this time in my life. There ain't much left to go, you know. But I'll tell you, it ain't going to happen because those days are gone. And I mean, take a look.
You're going to use your shotgun against their microwave laser beams or whatever?
But you know, Eve, every time I watch TV and I kind of get a pulse of America, forget it, man. I mean, they have no clue.
Pulse? It has a pulse.
Well, yeah, but it's just faint.
Yeah, it's the eyes are glazed over, the drool is running down the front of the shirt, and basically America fell asleep a long time ago, which is, you know, that's a real sad part about it.
It doesn't have a spiritual pulse.
I would ask Chuck and everyone else, just look back on your lives, however old you are. And I mean, I take a look at Republican regimes and Democrat regimes going back to 1960. That's what I remember. And I take a look at my life, and I say the same thing. Government's gotten bigger, government's gotten more powerful, taxes go up, wage earning power goes down, healthcare was a joke anyway forever, except I could actually go into a hospital in the 1970s and pay out of pocket. Now I can't even do that. So my point is, no matter who's in, where is the whole thread of life going? And are we really better off? And I got to tell you, I think we all know we aren't. And yet every... Go ahead.
I'll ask the question this way, kind of reverse it. And I suppose that it will only work if Chuck's a Christian, but if for people who are a Christian, you should be able to get this. Do you think that Jesus Christ would have left us here in a world where the system was perfectible? Well, what need would we have of him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's actually close to the core. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
On the practical side of things, maybe it's the teachings of Christ that we haven't emulated enough. He didn't engage the system at their level. And I've sitting around thinking about the healthcare bill and all the, you know, all the tactics that people are discussing now about, well, you know, we'll vote in the Republicans and they'll vote it out. Like Congress has ever rescinded anything they've done. Look, it's not going to happen. It's over. It's done with. It was done before. What played out over the last year was simply part of the dialectic to grease you enough so that you were so sick of it that when they went into chambers on the weekend to enact this thing, you wouldn't care anymore because you should have been pissed off, but you weren't.
Hey, let me, to bring us back to William Z. Foster, let me give you guys a quote from the last chapter. Viz, you're going to appreciate this, and I know you've read it a number of times. Okay, here's a quote. Communism will make good health, like thorough education, the property of all.
Yeah.
It'll make it the property of no one, because it will be diluted. I mean, look, you know, on one hand, they say, well, it's taken over one-seventh of the economy. Not really, because it's really been socialized on some level or another. And you can make the arguments about Medicare and the fact that that's been externally managed. Honestly, most hospitals are driven by bureaucracies and paperwork and the government at any given time. And I know, because I just spent, you know, the month of February, I spent 3 weeks in a hospital daily and watched what occurred there. And everything is regulated and tied down. I mean, look, I grew up in a small town where there was one doctor, and this guy would take anything for payment, literally. I mean, you know, we were in a rural community. And it was Marcus Welby, basically, without, you know, Barbara Streisand's husband. But the medical system changed immensely over the course of our time growing up. It became more socialized, more regimented, more mechanical, and all of it came as a result in the 1960s of the Great Society and Lyndon Johnson. That's when they began to basically button it up.
And Lyndon Johnson was the one who entrapped the churches to lead themselves into 501c3s.
Yeah,
when he was a congressman.
Yeah, but I mean, again, LBJ did what he was told to do. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're just point people and they're front people for things that take place, but that didn't come out of his brain. Those are the things that they are told to do. And right now, I look at Obama and I realize that a lot of this stuff, for instance, real quick, there is something out now that I got an email from Freak Lemon about called government retirement accounts. Are we aware of this at all?
Say that again?
Government retirement accounts. All right.
Yeah, this keeps coming up, doesn't it?
Well, it's mandatory. I mean, it's just a more blatant putting one's hand in your pocket. Anyway, you know, it's mandatory, and I look at these things, and the guy who wrote the article, and part of it was informative, part of it was an advertisement for what he was offering with financial planning, okay? So there was a lot of fear talk in there, and I said that to Freakland, and I go, you know, how much of this can I got to winnow out some of the data here, because the guy is obviously trying to push his own shtick, but here's what I resent, and that is that he says it's Obama's doing. It's like, no, man, if you're going to have a government retirement account, this is something, and I may have said this at the beginning, you know, it's so far-reaching, it's not got to do with any party. So for people, you know, for him to lay it on Obama, then he's going for the Republicans to come in and, you know, basically, and do business with him. But this is not an Obama thing. You know, and I mean, I'm not defending the guy. It's just that, come on, this is something that's in stone. And presidents, wherever their time is in office, like FDR for almost, what, 16 years, was told to do this. And you do it, and if you change your mind, like we said, you wind up like Kennedy. You don't change your mind. You do what you're told, and you don't step out of line. So, I mean, this is happening under his watch, but it's not going to be repealed by the Republicans. And like you said, too, Irani, about the health care. I mean, I'd be surprised if we really get that because, you know, like we said, we haven't had it for 60 years. Truman was lamenting this in 46. And it's like, well, if the real goal globally is to depopulate and kill off the hindmost, why in the world would they want to give us affordable health care unless it's to send us to butchers who are left here after everybody who's a reasonable physician and surgeon leaves town?
Hey, Liz?
Yeah.
I found it interesting. Two sentences after the quote I just gave you from Foster about communism making good health the property of all, literally two sentences later in the same paragraph, he writes, communism will scientifically regulate the growth of population.
Yeah, I was reading that too. That's interesting. Well, you know, scientism goes to the heart of the whole thing. This whole empirical logic thing that they've worked out with themselves, and you know that'll probably go into the dialectic materialism aspect of it as well because of how they define all that. I wanted to draw back for a minute on these government retirement accounts because it goes back to a conversation that I had with a couple of different people, including my parents, who agreed with my premise. And this largely it goes back to this. The retirement accounts in the country have all been basically modeled along the lines of what? The 401k or some other variant of that. But what's the first form that you fill out when you open a 401k or any other retirement plan?
I left them a long time ago, so
okay.
I can't
Well, I'll
remember.
Tell you because I get one bounced from my desk every year right before I rebound it into the trash can. It's an IRS tax form. Because essentially, all the retirement plans are encumbered under the tax laws. They are invested into the banking system via Wall Street. And as a result of the regulations, which go back to even, you know, the Federal Reserve and all the other things that have to do with the way our money system operates, my premise for a long time has been that money is only yours if they say you can have it because they tell you when you can take it out, how much you can take out. I mean, good grief. My father was dying and I was still having to niggle out $10,000 at a time out of his investment program in order to dodge tax hits that were going to, you know, begin eating away. I mean, we were paying 10% withholding on it. The fact of the matter is it's not your money, because if it was your money, you would be able to take it out at any time and put it anywhere you want to, and you can't do that. So is it really your money? Is it really your retirement account? So why are we surprised now when Obama says that basically what the government's proposing is to take over all retirement funds and fold them into that sinking hole that comprises Social Security and now this national health care system, because nothing is vested in the government. They don't save a penny. It's just something else that they're going to piss down a hole as they continue to take the country down.
Well, they've been at it for a long time, and they're continuing to do it. You know, why people don't understand what's going on, like I said, I've had conversations, and it cost me a friendship, a lifelong one, that began in 1966. But, you know, every time I was talking to my buddy, you know, he would start a sentence off about, well, Obama, I'm going, look, man, look, if you want to talk, then we're going to have to talk real, okay? We were all liberal when we didn't want to go to Vietnam. That was okay, now so, and this is the story often. Even the Bohemians, the famous Bohemians in New York, you know, they were all like liberals back when they were like young. Now they're 70 and they're all like conservative Republicans, go figure. But still in all, it's like, you know, it's not about Obama. It's not about George Bush. It's not about Clinton. It's not about any of them. The fact is, they're just the people in the front. You have to understand we're getting screwed. And the reason why we don't get more hip is because everybody's so caught up in the worst partisan politics I've ever seen in my life. I mean, as you saw what happened with that health reform and what some of these people resorted to with deprecations verbally and assaults physically, it's like, this is what we're headed for. Wait till next election, I'm telling you. As long as everybody's out there fighting each other about Republicans and Democrats, they'll never understand to step back and understand that the one who runs the show is behind the curtain in Wizard of Oz. And you guys know it and we know it. But I tell you, when I look at this critical mass, And you know, this goes back to Chuck. And, man, I'm glad you asked what you did, and I feel so bad. And, of course, you may think I'm all wet anyway. That's okay. I'm just telling you, there isn't any way to beat this thing. You can't vote it out. You can't fight it out. We got a situation. And like I said to Lemelin and some other people, sometimes the news is just bad. I'm sorry. It is. If there was a way out, I'd be all for it. I can't see it. The whole deal with the militia this week, they should tell everybody, forget that. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, go play guns.
And that
was fun.
What, that was the, actually, that was the following comments that came up on Chuck's statements. You know, that was the first thing that came up as well, because I think the chat room gets it. I think most of the people that listen to us get it, that, you know, we're not taking this thing on. You know, these guys out in Michigan, you know, you almost feel sorry for them that they were that stupid, that they didn't see it coming, that they were able to get all these firearms, and then wind up with what, a full blown raid on a property to take out seven men. I mean, that's a ridiculous show of force, but it was done for a reason, because
sure. This
is a drama. They found their useless idiots. They seeded their agents into it, and basically, they went for it because it's the big stage. And let's face it, now we can bang down Christians because they're ready to lock and load as well.
Hey, Randy, yeah. I got to get this in. And as you mentioned, peeking behind the curtain, too. But, Randy, you mentioned the tax forms. This is the kind of what I'm about to say is the kind of stuff that it set a couple listeners off last month. But, okay.
Go for it.
All right. And they know who they are. But go to, well, first of all, let me tell you what they proved. Okay, James Montgomery and The Informer, through their many years of research and doing the wet work, as Viz says, they proved. You look at those tax forms, you pick up, a 1040 form. Those guys proved that, I mean, when you read the paragraph where they go through this, it is truly labyrinthine and mind-boggling, but they give you specifics. If you go to this form, to this form, to this form, and there's like 30 forms and numbers you got to go through, but they prove that ultimately those funds, your tax dollars, go to the Bank of London, or the City of London. The Exchequer of England. And so we are still a British colony. We never left off being that, but go to atgpress.com. It stands for againstthegrainpress.com. Then on the left, you click on the works of The Informer or the works of James Montgomery, which the button for that says knowledge is freedom. And guess
That's
what?
Right.
Those,
That's right.
those two guys, what they proved, they did it independently of one another.
But what people, all right, now what's happened here is the Tea Party teabaggers, whoever the heck they're supposed to be, under Sarah, Train Chimp, Palin, are hip to the Fed, and it's a private bank. Now, and Glenn Beck kind of talked about this, so these people are walking around thinking they're really together because they understand now that the Federal Reserve is not federal but a private bank, and they want to get rid of it. But what they don't understand is that the trail doesn't end with the Federal Reserve. That took the place of the British Board of Trade, and we're still paying tribute to the Crown because the money goes through the Fed, and you still have an IMF whose headquarters are in D.C. You still have a World Bank whose headquarters are in D.C., and that's where the money goes. So we're still paying tribute.
Back in the 80s, when all the American celebrity-worshipping little idiots were watching on television Princess Diana's big pompous wedding, well, I hope you enjoyed it, Americans, because you paid for it.
Paid for it. Yeah, and that'll teach you to marry a Muslim.
Oh, yeah.
That's another whole story.
Well, you know, you've got the interesting thing about the whole teabag movement to me is that's been set up as, you know, another straw man to basically trot out there. And they've got a really useful idiot with Sarah Palin. I'm sorry. You know, it was fun to watch her in the election just because she did present a certain amount of resistance. But she's 5 miles wide and a quarter inch deep in terms of understanding where she's at. You know, and they used her, and then they dissed her, and she's surprised by that. But then she goes on Fox News with Glenn Beck, and you've got to wonder, euphemistically speaking, Sarah's sleeping around a whole lot these days.
Look, actually, she's going to get thrown to the curb because she's not going to get the nomination.
Well, this is not smart tactical thinking politically, because she's wearing out her welcome, and she's exposed all of her weaknesses to the max by being in the media this much, and she's that durable personality.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm glad you said that, but when I listen to people who are being interviewed, of course, they always take the ones that say what the networks want to have said. But the thing is, and I was saying to Gordon, I think I did it when we did the show on Catch-22.
Mm-hmm.
You have Palin, who left her gubernatorial position, how long ago? A year or so ago? And everybody was wondering, you know, she was like basically melting down and all this other stuff. Then all of a sudden, she comes out with an autobiography, which wasn't written by her, because that dumbass couldn't do anything with a crayon that quickly. So there is that another whole ghost thing going on. And what they did is they took her and they trained her like she was like, what would you call it, Pygmalion? And they put her in her little outfits, like cheerleader outfits, and then I really dug, you know, the motorcycle jacket. It's like, what are you, Fonzie, you idiot? So anyway, they put her in little outfits, and she comes out and says things, and now they've got her, doing a reality show? They have her on, what are we doing here?
Well,
what are we doing
also,
here?
You know that it's the CNP backing her, but you know what the CNP and the Dominionists and the Evangelicals who are backing her, what they are doing? They're doing the same thing the prophet Isaiah warned his people against. Americans are so gutless nowadays, and even and maybe especially evangelical Americans, that they are violating God's word by propping up women over them. Women are ruling over us, and children are our oppressors.
Yeah, I
understand what that is scripturally, right?
Well, and scripturally, we're not supposed to entangle ourselves with the world, you know?
We shouldn't be in, and you look, we talked about this, and we get the second hour coming up, and if people want to like get in on this, I think it's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
It's a healthy debate. But you know, the whole thing in Christ's actions and words, and I'm sorry, man, but I mean, somebody show me where I'm wrong. And I heard this from the Collins, you know, oh yeah, there's a reason for us to run for office. What did Jesus say and do every single time? How clear does he have to make it? I'm sorry, I'm not of this world. Get your coin out of here. Get your taxes out of here. It's got nothing to do with me. Do I want to get militarily strong? No. Peter, why did you lop off the messenger's ear? Not a good idea. Put the sword away. Heals the guy. You see what I mean? And they overlook it time and time again. They go back and they grab Old Testament scriptures at a time when things were different. There was a different disposition between the Lord and his people. We can agree to that.
Mm-hmm.
They go back for that warlike nature, though, and they want to inject it today. And I keep looking at Jesus. Yeah. You know, there was a story. I'm sorry. Let me just do this as we get to the top of the hour. We're there
already. No, we're fine. We'll slide. We're good.
All right, let me
never
just say this.
Time.
I wasn't saved when I heard this. I was in some, Western Civilization class in 1970 with a teacher that looked like Phil Spector.
You had a handgun?
I tell you what, one day, this guy was probably, well, anyway, that was a strange time in 1970, anyway, but he was a good guy. But, you know, we were going through these discussions, and he gave us an example. I don't know what it was. We were doing something about Spain and the Inquisition. Again, remember, I did not have any clue to the stuff I know today. What am I? I'm 19, I'm 18, I'm sitting in the class, right? He gave an example of the Inquisition, and I don't know who supposedly were the inquisitors. I assume in this case it was the Dominicans. But so anyway, they're doing this thing, they're interviewing people, and most of them are going, obviously, to death. And then Jesus pops up, and they go, Lord Jesus, we're so happy to have you here. He goes, what are you doing? He says, we're putting to death people, you know, who are profligates, who are heretics. He goes, I didn't want you to do that. And they sent Jesus to die. So, you know what I mean? Nobody pays attention to him. You know, he didn't whoop anybody upside the head. His words were firm. His actions were firm. But somehow his voice just gets overridden by these, and I don't even think they're Christians, who want to go and fight for, like, I don't know, to advance God's kingdom. I don't get it, but here's where we are, and it's going to get worse.
Well, the militiamen in Michigan basically attempted to make the case that Jesus did tell us to take up arms and go to war with the Antichrist because he said at one point to sell your cloak and buy a sword. You know, and I talked about this on my show earlier this week. You know, maybe that's not the loophole clause. That was practical advice for a time when roadside robbers would take you down for, you know, whatever the coinage was at that time. That was just wisdom. You know, there's nothing against self-defense or defending one's family.
Exactly.
And there's a thin line in all of that. You know,
but to go to fight, go off to fight for the corporation? Exactly. You're right. I mean, if somebody breaks into a house, what are you going to do? Sit there and go, oh, you know, kill us and take whatever you want?
Well, no, I think at that point you're a reprobate. I mean, I feel incumbent upon myself to use reasonable prudence in defending my family and my, you know, the property and everything. But I'm not going to lock and load on a whole group of police that come storming in as a result of me having a cache of weapons and a bunch of guys running around in war paint.
No, when the government comes for you, I mean, that's a different deal. And, you know, if people want to take a look, are you guys familiar with the White Rose Group from pre-World War II Germany?
A little bit. Yeah, a little, yeah.
I mean, just take a look. You can really find some poignant stories. But you had a group of students who understood what was going on. And to their great peril, they pulled off a lot of shenanigans, but mostly informational leaflets. And I think 7 or 9 of them, who were the core of the group, went to their death. And, I mean, to me, I don't know, they were a Christian. It didn't matter. The thing is, they understood the machinery, and they went ahead and they spoke against it, knowing they were going to get crushed. Did they stop the Nazi takeover? No. Were their acts in vain? Well, since we're talking about them, I think not. But you have to understand. I mean, it's just that's the way of governments. It's about the money. And it always will be that. And they put in, you know, patriotic reasons to go to war. And I'm, you know, you've seen enough of the propaganda. I mean, I've been through it 3 times, and we're going to do it 1 more time. I can't believe it. I just can't believe we're doing the same thing over and over again.
We are. We're in a repetitive cycle.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, children die.
You mentioned the Dominionists a few minutes back, Viz, how they always, when they want to justify their crusading war now overseas, they will always quote Old Testament, the warlike passages in the Old Testament. But they're totally self-contradictory and hypocritical. They cherry-pick Scripture because when they then talk about obeying our government, unlimited submission, they only focus on the New Testament and specifically their own peculiar interpretation of Romans 13, and they suddenly abandon the Old Testament altogether, especially all of those multitudes of times in the Old Testament where God told his judges, he rose up a judge to take out a wicked king.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a schizophrenia of religion. You know, that's the same argument that's been made for the Quran as well. I mean, basically, there's two Mohammeds in the Quran. There's one that seems to be a complete pacifist, and the other one that basically wants to do jihad against the infidels. And we militarize that aspect of it, and we put up this, like, it's almost like a bifurcated route. You know, on the one side you have this peaceful religion, this religion of love and charity and good works, and on the other side of it you have the militants that basically say, you know, if you're an infidel, if you're an unbeliever, we have to kill you, we have to suppress you, we have to do whatever is necessary. It's the same philosophy that guided Rome as it marauded through the Dark Ages. It's the same thing that you had in the 14th century in Jerusalem as well. You know, it's just one big conquest after another, and it's all in the name of God.
You got no argument for me, but what I see right now is, I mean, you know, we see the Patriots talking about being, you know, good citizens and all this other stuff, and they don't want to pay their taxes. And I understand that. I don't understand why there are loopholes that some people survive through and some don't. And when they don't, they go down in flames. My feeling is, look, the Lord knows we're all slaves to a certain extent, and that is not to pass over lightly what happened to Africans in this country who were actually manacled. But we're all slaves to a certain extent because of the tie-in that we have with Social Security, which was supposed to be, you know, obviously for, well, not obviously, but it was supposed to be for a short time, but was one of those things that happened during the Depression as an emergency measure that somehow just didn't go away. And I misspoke. It isn't government retirement account. It's guaranteed retirement account. anybody wants to see this thing, go to Angel
Nexus.
Is that
like guaranteed Social Security now, which, you know, quite frankly, can you even buy a bag of groceries with that anymore?
But you know what? And they'll tell you, I mean, and the Iron Man wrote about this too. There is no Social Security fund. That's the biggest slush fund in the world. So, I mean, that's another, you know, like the FDIC, that's another thing that help, they make people feel so comfortable with, and yet, really, you know, it's really not there, and one day it's going to disappear. I have to wonder if this guaranteed retirement account is going to somehow come in and replace that. So, I mean, anyway, I don't know where I was going. You got me off my train of thought, which isn't that hard to do.
Well, why don't we pull the train over to the side and take a break at this point, because we're past the hour, and we'll shoot some music out to the stream, and you guys have about 7.5 minutes of music, so you can go get a drink or do whatever you got to do.
I walk the dog.
This song's for Gordon, although he probably can't hear it. Joy Division.
Oh, man. Yeah. Don't even get me started, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to throw some music up, take about a 7-minute break, and we will be back for the other side of the Watchmen Live.
Getting faster, moving faster now, it's getting out of hand. On the 10th floor, down the back stairs, into no man's land. Lights are flashing, cars are crashing, getting frequent now. I've got the spirit, lose the feeling, let it out somehow. Till the spirit new sensation takes hold, then you know.